Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Happier Kids Now 2010 Expo for Parents and Teachers. I'm Patrick McMillan, coming to you from the Mile High City in Denver, Colorado, and I'm honored to be one of your co-founders of the Happier Kids Now Expo and also one of your hosts for today's interview. I'm also the author of An Exercise in Happiness, a 30-day emotional fitness program for kids, and the founder of KidsCanDoAnything.com. Now I'd like to introduce you to my other co-founder and co-host, Rhonda Ryder.
Hello, and I am Rhonda Ryder, and I'm talking to you from Longwood, Florida, which is just outside of Orlando, and I am the other co-founder of the Happier Kids Now 2010 Online Expo, and your co-host for today's amazing interview. I am also the founder of KidsAwakening.com and creator of the Inspired Parenting Program.
Well, both Rhonda and I are deeply grateful to the thousands of parents and teachers and caregivers who've subscribed to this amazing interview series, and we're thrilled to have assembled such an outstanding lineup of experts who are going to provide us with valuable tools and techniques and up-to-date information to help us raise happy, self-confident, and compassionate kids and teens.
And we have just a couple of quick things to go over before we get started with our interview with Debbie Godfrey from PositiveParenting.com. First, if you are on the webcast, we encourage you to submit a few questions to our guests, and all you have to do is submit your question and press the submit button. We will answer some questions that came in earlier during the webcast, and we will try to get to also a few live questions as well. And we want to remind you that the replay of this interview and all of the remaining interviews that we will do during this expo, the next 2 weeks, will be available for you to listen to for free during the 48-hour replay call. And also, we want you to know that this entire series of 26 outstanding interviews and trainings is available as downloadable MP3s, and also the transcriptions are available when you upgrade to a VIP status, and this means that you can then have lifetime access to these trainings, so you can listen to them over and over again as many times as you want to. And of course, if you would like to find out more about that, you can go to www.happierkidsnow.com/upgrade. And the thing about that is we're doing a special thing for the first 500 people that upgrade. They will also receive a free 30-minute coaching session with one of our recommended coaches. We have about 17 or 20 coaches, I think, right now. They can have that free 30-minute session, and they also get additional 5 hours of interviews with parents, leading edge parents that I have interviewed in another awesome product. So that's at happierkidsnow.com/upgrade.
Well, it is my great pleasure and honor to introduce our wonderful guest today, Debbie Godfrey. Debbie founded Positive Parenting in 1994 as a tool to implement her vision that all children should be raised lovingly and nonviolently, and believes when discipline is appropriate, it should motivate kids through love and not fear. Debbie raised awareness of positive parenting by putting it on the World Wide Web in 1995. That's 15 years ago. That's long before most parenting resources became available online. Through positive parenting, Debbie provides parent education classes, parenting workshops, in-service presentations, and consultations to parents. And her services are available to early childhood education centers and schools and churches and businesses and others who provide services for parents and children. So get comfortable and have a pen and paper handy and get ready for an outstanding interview with our special guest, Debbie Godfrey. Thank you so much, Debbie, for being here to speak with us today.
Yes, Patrick, thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. It's an honor.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, let's get right into it. My first question for you is what motivated you and inspired you to become an expert in positive parenting?
Well, when my kids were young, I was miserable about 90% of the time. I was home with them, and I was yelling at them and spanking them, and I was just not having a good time raising my kids, and I happened to have a parenting class when they were 1, 2, and 6, so they were pretty young, and it changed my whole life. It just made parenting fun, rewarding. I was having a good time. I felt like I was being of service to my kids. And after about a year of using the tools that I had learned in the parenting class that I took, I decided it would be okay to teach this to other parents. And so I got trained in the curriculum that I had learned, which is called Redirecting Children's Behavior. And that's when I started my business, Positive Parenting. And I started teaching classes and workshops locally here where I live, and then began to expand out. I did a few state conferences. And a couple of years ago, I got to teach in India for a month, doing positive discipline in the classroom for teachers and schools around India. And a couple of years ago, I went to Beijing, China, and got to teach in a learning center for parents there for a few weeks. And it was quite fabulous, because parents across the globe are facing the same issues with their kids. They just love their kids, and they want to discipline them appropriately. And I find that these schools just work for parents no matter where, what culture, what kind of circumstances they're in.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, that's fantastic. Around the world, in other parts of the world, yeah, I mean, it stands to reason that other parents are going to face the same issues everywhere with their kids.
Right, and I think early on when I, you know, you mentioned being on the web in 95, and I started off facilitating chat room discussions on parenting, and I would meet parents from, especially in Europe, where in many countries, there's I think 16 countries now in Europe where spanking is not allowed. You can get a fine if you spank your children. And and it was really interesting to learn how the parents were affected by that, because, you know, most of us have come to parenthood with the understanding that spanking is part of discipline, and yet the research has shown that it is not the best form of discipline for children, and in fact, in many cases, it can be harmful. So there's much better ways, more effective ways to discipline your children than that. And to find that, for instance, I spoke with a parent in Finland, and, you know, she was just like, well, the government said it's not good for us to spank our kids, so we just don't. And it's almost like they don't question authority like we do here. So I feel like in the United States, it's never going to be something that the government's going to say, okay, you can't spank your kids anymore, because people will be outraged. It's going to be a personal decision made by each parent.
Right. Right.
Well, I had a question, Debbie.
Uh-huh.
It's very basic, simple question, but I think it's a good one. Why do kids misbehave at home or in the classroom?
Well, it's interesting, because the curricula that I teach is called Redirecting Children's Behavior, and it's based on something we call Adlerian psychology.
What is the name of the curriculum? I didn't quite catch that. What's the name of the curriculum you teach?
Redirecting Children's Behavior.
Okay. Redirecting Children's Behavior. Thanks.
And the basis for that class, and also many parents may be familiar with STEP, which is Systematic Training for Effective Parenting, and also the Positive Discipline series. All of these curricula that are out are based in Adlerian psychology. And Adler was a psychologist that worked right around the time of Sigmund Freud. And Carl Jung and Adler were both disciples or students of Sigmund Freud. And at a certain point, they outgrew Freud. So Carl Jung said, oh, Freud, you're a geek. It's not about a two-year-old fixation. He goes, it's about the psychology of the unconscious. And Carl Jung went off and created his whole wonderful psychoanalysis and dream work and all that sort of thing. Well, Adler did something similar. He outgrew Freud, and he said, it's not about all this latent behavior. It's about social interest. And what Adler said was that all humans are born with the need to interact with others, and we use our behavior to do that, to get certain needs met. So from the time we're born, we're seeking ways to feel loved, to feel valuable, to feel powerful, to feel like we have a place, to belong, to be special, and to experiment and explore. And all of our behavior is designed to get those needs met. And we're going to either do that through appropriate behavior or misbehavior or whatever works with these parents. And so many times children will stumble onto what we would call inappropriate or misbehavior. And whatever the reinforcement is that they're getting, we say it works for them, or it gives them a goodie. It gives them some kind of reinforcement. And so they continue to do that misbehavior. And we might think that because we're yelling at our children, that would deter them. But actually, in many circumstances, yelling is actually reinforcing whatever behavior that they're doing. Because in many circumstances, from a child's perspective, yelling is attention, or yelling is connection. And if that child only perceives that, well, I can either get mom engaged with me yelling at me, or she's going to leave me alone, that child is probably going to do stuff that'll get that child engaged with the parent by misbehaving in order to get that connection achieved.
So it's for attention.
Yeah, it's attention, but not necessarily just attention. It's also recognition or an experience of feeling powerful or valuable. And so it's a way that kids, and actually all of us, get our needs met, to feel powerful, to feel valuable, to feel special. And it's with our behavior. So they misbehave in order to get their needs met. And when they're not getting them met through appropriate behavior, they're going to be doing it through what we call inappropriate behavior. And so we'll say that a misbehaving child is a discouraged child. Discouraged from what? From getting those needs met through more appropriate behavior.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So as a thing parent, of negative attention, I mean, you know, it's better than no attention, right?
Absolutely. From a child's perspective, that is so true. And from a child's perspective, too, it just depends on what their experience has been in the world. And what I found when I first took this class is my kids would be fighting all day long, and I'd be trying to do the dishes or fix some food or something like that, and they'd be out in the backyard, and they'd start fighting. So I'd run back there, and I'd yell at them, knock it off, cut it out, you know, quit fighting. And I'd go back in, and I'd vacuum, and I'd do this stuff, and maybe 5 minutes later, they'd be fighting again. And I was yelling at them all day like that. And what I found was, when I took the class, I learned this idea of spend time with them when they're not misbehaving. And so what I would do is that I would be doing my chores or whatever, and the kids would go out in the backyard, and they'd be playing, and I'd look out there, and I would see them all playing nicely together. And so I'd look at my dishes, and I'd look outside, and I'd look at my dishes, and I'd look outside, and I'd go outside, and I'd say, I love the way you guys are all playing so nicely together. Can I hang out with you? And I would go out, and I would play with them when they were mm-hmm. getting along. And it was amazing. Within 2 days, they were getting along all day long, and I had so much more time to do the dishes and to fix dinner and to do all my because I was making it a point to get out there and just spend a few minutes with them when they were getting along. That's what it trained them to do. So simple, but so not obvious to most of us parents.
Mm-hmm.
So simple. So simple. You know, well, I'm a dad of two boys, and I've been doing that only because also it's kind of selfish on my part, because it makes me feel like I'm a little boy again when I'm back out playing with them. It's a great feeling. Now, you mentioned the two appropriate versus inappropriate misbehavior. And how do we identify those? Now, and you also mentioned, too, that you had a kind of an exercise illustration to do with me.
Right.
Well,
what happens is that Adler created this system with the understanding that all kids have the need for social interest. They've got these needs that they're trying to get met through their behavior. And when they're getting them met through inappropriate behavior or misbehavior, we have a system for identifying and correcting misbehavior when it does occur. And this system is called a mistaken goal chart. And you'll see these in the various parenting books out there. They'll have these mistaken goal charts that have all the four reasons why kids misbehave and how to identify it and how to correct it. And if you're a parent, you want to understand that when your child is misbehaving, they're discouraged from getting one of their needs met. And they're going to be in one of these mistaken goals. And the four goals are undue attention, power, revenge, and inadequacy.
What was the first one?
Attention, or I like to call it undue attention, because all kids need to have attention, obviously. And undue attention is when the kids were fine a minute ago and your phone rings and then they go ballistic in the background. Or, you know, they were fine a minute ago and your husband comes home and starts talking to you and then they're in your face and interrupting you and going crazy. That's undue attention.
Right. Yeah. I remember that. I remember. Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, because, you know, we have to give our kids love and attention. So it's not the legitimately needed attention. It's the kind where they've learned to misbehave this way in order to get you involved or engaged with them. So this system of identifying and correcting misbehavior, I've actually created a tool. It's called Dial a Discipline, and it's a tool to use to, you know, when they get in a situation when their child's misbehaving, they can pull out the dial of discipline, and it'll help them identify the child's misbehavior and then offer some possible solutions to that misbehavior. So what I wanted to do today was give parents a sampling of how this works. And so if you understand the kind of, to me, the great thing about it is that we don't have to psychoanalyze our kids, because so often, when we're parenting, our kids will do something that we consider pretty dumb. And we're like, why did you do that? And they'll be like, I don't know. And we try to psychoanalyze them. And the problem is, we're not therapists. And our kids have no idea why they're doing what they're doing. I mean, they're just kids. They're just doing whatever they do. They have no clue why they did what they just did. And so asking the why questions leads us nowhere. And it doesn't help us be able to make our kids behave any better. It doesn't help our kids be able to understand their own behavior any better. So the way that this works is that when your child misbehaves, instead of looking out to them in terms of why are they doing that, what's wrong with them, you know, what happened, any of that stuff, which is all going to lead you nowhere, instead you look at your own feelings as a result of the child's misbehavior. And that's how you're going to identify what goal your child is in. So on this systematic approach to parenting, you'll be able to identify which of the four mistaken goals your child is in, which will lead you to the appropriate corrective measures or the appropriate discipline for that particular goal. So Patrick, if you wanted to be my dad, and I'm like, I'm a kid, and I just left my toy in the middle of the living room, and you just tell me to pick it up, and I'm gonna be a kid. And so if there's a pause, then just tell me again to pick it up. Just keep saying, Daddy, pick up your toy. Daddy, pick up your toy. And what I want the parents out there to do, I want you to take a deep breath while I start misbehaving and put yourself in Patrick's shoes. And if you were in Patrick's shoes, how would you be feeling right now as a result of my misbehavior? Okay? And then I'll explain a little more about how that works after we do this little exercise. Okay, so Patrick, go ahead and tell me to pick up my toy.
Okay. Betty, you left your toy in the middle of the floor. Would you pick that up for me, please?
Uh-uh.
Now, honey, we can't leave toys in the middle of the floor. I asked you to pick that up for me.
No.
Now, do you think toys belong in the middle of the floor? I don't think so. I would like for you to pick that up and put it back where it belongs.
No, I won't. You can't make me. Okay, stop. Okay, so how are you feeling there, Patrick, if you were the parent of me in this situation?
I'm feeling a little frustrated. Feeling
frustrated by what?
What about the power struggle that's
okay,
going
good.
On. that I'm the dad, and it's my, I want to say I'm the dad, it's my house.
Right.
Yes.
And I'm going to make you do it. And so and how I'm, about feeling, say, provoked?
Oh, yes. Buttons are being maybe pushed.
Maybe a little bit challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you, the parent, are feeling provoked, challenged, like you want to make this kid do it, then you know your child's goal is power. And what my behavior is saying is, inside, I feel powerless. I don't know how to get my need to feel powerful met through appropriate behavior. But I know if I defy you, if I don't do what you say, and you get all crazy, I feel powerful. So
yes.
I've mistakenly come to believe that this is how I get my need to feel powerful met in my world. And that's why we call these mistaken goals, because a child has mistakenly stumbled onto the fact that if I do this misbehavior with this parent, they're going to get all nuts. And it's funny because we actually give them this power. We'll tell our kids, you're driving me crazy. And we're giving them the power of our emotions, and that's what's reinforcing their mistaken belief that if I defy you, then I'm powerful because I have the ability to control your emotions. And it's a huge error that we make by giving them that power because it's not really theirs.
Wow.
So
how
that's
do we
wow,
give them that?
Four goals. Yes. What would you say, Rhonda?
How do we give them that mistaken belief? Or how do we make that happen?
Well, it's interesting because how old do you think kids are when they stumble? What we call this, did you notice, it's hard to see because I usually do this in workshop format, but when I was defying you, could you hear kind of the smirk in my voice?
Yes.
Or the fact that I was sort
yes.
of laughing?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
So we call that the joy of opposing. So the joy of opposing, that is the goodie that children and all of us get, actually, even adults get, when we power struggle with somebody. It feels good to power struggle with somebody. Oftentimes, children in this situation feel like they're winning something. Even though nobody's winning when you're in a power struggle with your child, if they're defying you and you're losing it, and they're able to get louder and louder, they're from their viewpoint, they're winning. And so that's important to know that even though it's not true, how your child is perceiving these situations is very, very key in terms of what they're going to come to believe and how they're going to behave. So in this situation, the joy of opposing, how old do you think your kids were when they learned the joy of opposing?
Wow.
Pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
yeah.
Just throw out a guess. What do you think?
Three.
Okay.
Two,
okay.
Maybe.
2 months.
And that's typical. Usually parents say, yeah, 2, 3, maybe sometimes say 1.5. I think it happens at 6 months old.
Yeah.
And what's the developmental task at 6 to 8 months old? What do they do?
To get fed and changed.
Well, what's their big developmental task that they achieve when they're usually between 6 and 8 months old? What do they start doing?
Walking?
Close. They usually walk at about a year.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Crawling?
Crawling, right. Okay, so I think joy of opposing gets learned when they start crawling. And what they're doing is they're crawling around and they're doing their need to experiment and explore, one of their basic needs. And they're crawling around the room and they're all of a sudden they get to the dirt, the plant in the living room, and there's dirt. And they pick up a handful of dirt and they put it on your white rug. They pick up a handful of dirt and they put it on your white rug. And we come in and we pick them up and we say, no, 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 and we take them out. A little while later, they're crawling around, they're doing their need to experiment and explore, and they see the plant in the living room, and they see the dirt, and they take it out, and they put it on the white rug, and they take it out, and they put it on the white rug, and we go, no, 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 and we take them out of there. The third time they're crawling around, they're no longer doing their need to experiment and explore. Now when they go for the dirt and the plant, they're turning around and they're looking to see how we're going to react when they touch that dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so somewhere in that, and this usually happens, it's not just twice, I'm just doing that for not taking up a lot of time here. Usually we've done this, probably said 10 or 15 times, we've told them not to get the dirt out of the plant. We've probably escalated in terms of our response. So we started out saying no, 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 then we say no, 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 then we're yelling no, 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 then we're slapping their hands, then we're threatening them. So it escalates. And that's where they learn the joy of opposing. It's in the escalation of our emotional response. Okay, so it's that change. Because we get to discipline our kids. I mean, when we're getting power struggles, we get to discipline them. But the problem is when we escalate. So every time we escalate, that's reinforcing the child, saying, I've got power here. I'm onto something. And so the first thing that you want to do to not cause the joy of opposing is to start choosing your discipline response. So every time that you get into a situation with your children where you need to discipline something, you want to take a minute and you want to say, what is the best way to respond to this child right now? And so for this example, I'd look at my child and I'd go, I think what I'll do is I'll pick him up and I'll say, Michael will learn if he wants to play in the living room that he can't take the dirt out of the plant or he's going to have to go in the kitchen. And I'll go plop him down in the kitchen. So the next time he's doing it, I'll go over and I'll pick him up and I'll say, Michael will learn if he wants to play in the living room that he can't take the dirt out of the plant or he's going to have to go in the kitchen. And I'll do that over and over like a broken record. Young kids learn best through repetition and redirection. Anything else is not going to train them in the long term. It'll be a short-run gain, and it won't teach them how to think well. So like a broken record, whether it takes 30 or 40 or 100 times, that's how you want to choose your response and respond like a broken record, and that's how you'll avoid training them in the joy of opposing.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
I just,
I wish I had known this
years ago.
I know. Well, and the thing is, I do a two-hour workshop on dealing with power struggles, so I go through all this background information of why kids love to do it, and then I go through and help parents with all the tools for getting out of power struggles and how to prevent them, because it's such a huge part of our parenting these days is being in power struggles with our kids, and so I just find it really valuable to have a lot of information about it.
So really, the bottom line is, even with adults or anyone, children, it's like if you're getting upset, it's like we were talking about this with Izzy Kalman in the bullying interview. It's, if you're getting upset, then the other person is getting all the power and getting the charge out of that power, even if they're 6 months old or if they're, 50 years old. It's still the other person is getting that winning that power struggle. And so the key is then to, find some other ways of dealing with in-reaming and not get upset, would you say?
Exactly. And our first step for getting out of a power struggle is always to sidestep the power struggle. And what sidestepping looks like is to stop talking. Literally, all our power struggles with our children, once our kids are 3 years and over, are going to be verbal battles, where we're going to tell them to do something, and they're going to either say no or be a no, meaning, their stance is going to be that I'm not going to do this, because many kids are afraid to say no directly to their parents, but they'll be a behavior that's saying no, even if they don't say it directly. So the first thing that I teach parents is how to stop talking, and that's not easy because most of us are trained that kids should not talk like that to us, and that if they do, we need to correct it or else we're not doing our job as a parent. So it's quite challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So then what's the next step?
Yeah, okay, so what when you sidestep the power struggle, meaning that you stop talking, that gives you some breathing room. See, as soon as you stop talking, and it's really important. I feel like I'm shortchanging everybody because I can't show parents this exactly. What I do is actually demonstrate it physically, what it looks like, because when you sidestep that power struggle, it's really important that you maintain connection with your child. So you don't want to sidestep it, meaning you don't want to stop talking and glare at them, or you don't want to stop talking and stomp off. You want to stop talking with a loving gaze. I might be nodding my head if my child's still talking. I'll just be looking at them, just a loving smile and waiting for them to finish. Because, see, what happens is, how kids always have to get the last word in?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how do you think that they learn that they always have to get the last word in?
From you.
From us.
From us.
Right, because we always have to get the last word in. So we're actually training them that you have to get the last word in, because that's how we are.
Right.
So as soon as you be different, as soon as you be, I'm going to stop talking here. I'm going to drop my end of this power struggle. I'm going to drop my end of this tug of war by not talking. You're role modeling something completely different to them. And I always tell parents, dropping your end of the tug of war or stopping talking is a very high-level communication skill that most adults are not capable of achieving. So you cannot expect your children to come out knowing how to do this, and yet we do all the time. We keep telling them, don't talk back to me. That's enough. I don't want to hear anymore, while we're getting more words in, which is what we're showing them. See, it's so complicated and confusing to them. So you have to show them this. You have to just stop talking, let them. If you stop talking and they keep talking, there's only a certain amount of talking they can do before they burn out if you're not responding with anything, and they don't last too long. And so now you're role modeling this thing, and it might take 3 years or 4 years or 5 years, but you will see if you practice doing this that eventually your children learn that they don't have to get the last word in, and they'll stop. It's amazing. But you can't expect it right off the bat. We're not born with it.
Right.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here and say, well, what if you have a 13-year-old that's calling you names and saying, you know, you're stupid or you're an idiot or whatever, and
that's not a power struggle. And mm-hmm. that's, again, the example that I gave you where I role-played with Patrick, I was mm-hmm. showing you what happens when a child's in the goal of power. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's three other goals. So when your child's misbehaving in any of those three goals, there's a completely different discipline response. Then what I'm talking about right now is only in response to times when your child is misbehaving and they're in the goal of power, which means when you take a deep breath when they're misbehaving, you're going to say, I'm feeling challenged and provoked. In the case of a child calling you names or saying hurtful, hateful things, that's going to be the goal of revenge. And again, I know I should give everybody a handout that's out there so that, you know, you could be following along with something that'll help this make more sense. But the goal of revenge has a different set of cues to identify it and a completely different way to redirect it. And again, the dial of discipline that I created has all four goals. It has all four identification factors and then how to correct it. And I've actually created a CD describing to parents how to use it and what it looks like. So it's just like how we're talking here, and I explain that to parents in the CD so that they have a sense of each of the four goals. So the one you're talking about.
I don't want to interfere with.
I want to do as much as I can do in 1 hour with you.
I don't want to interfere with your flow and your logic of how you present this information. But I was thinking if you could, you know, give us as much as you can in terms of those four things.
Okay.
You know, like
so
go through your process.
Let's do another one. So Rhonda, be your 13-year-old that's, you know, saying hurtful, hateful things. And I'll just respond. And I want the parents out there, again, to put themselves in your shoes and see how they're feeling. Okay?
Okay.
So let's come up with a situation. Well, okay, let's just do the picking up the toy that I left in the living room. But I'll respond. I'll respond like your daughter. So you be my parent and tell me to pick up my toy, and I'll respond like the way you were describing your daughter.
And how old are you?
I could be 13, that's fine.
Okay, all right.
So maybe it's pick up my backpack.
Okay. You need to pick up your backpack and put it away.
You're so mean to me.
I'm not mean. I just want you to put your backpack away. I want a clean living room.
You're stupid. Dad never makes me do stuff like that.
Well, you shouldn't be disrespecting me. That is not appropriate.
I hate you. Okay, stop. So how does that feel?
Really bad.
Okay, so what's the feeling? If a kid says, I hate you, what does that feel like?
It feels terrible. It feels...
Ow, it hurts. Ow.
Yeah.
Right? It hurts. Okay, so when you feel hurt, like you want to hurt them back, then you know your child's goal is the goal of revenge. And what my behavior is saying is, I feel hurt inside. So something's hurt me. And I'm going to make you feel hurt the way I feel hurt. So it doesn't make any sense, but this is why they're misbehaving the way they are. They feel hurt, and they're going to make you feel hurt the way they feel hurt. They're going to take you down with them. And that's the goal of revenge. So that has a whole different set of corrective measures. And in fact, if you use the redirection for power struggles with a child in the goal of revenge, it will utterly fail. So you'll use if you use those discipline tools on this child, I'll get worse. I'll get way, way worse. So it's very important for parents to kind of get a sense of which goal their kids are doing before they use the corrective measure, because otherwise you'll use something, you know, from the positive parenting, and you'll go, well, that doesn't work. Well, in my experience, it always works when it's appropriate, you know, when it's the appropriate time and place. So when it doesn't work, it means I'm kind of using it out of turn in a situation where it's really not the most appropriate thing to do. Okay?
So
let's do another one. How about if we have Patrick tell me to pick up my backpack and all, just so that everybody gets a sense of all four goals.
Okay. I would like for you to pick up your backpack, please.
I can't. I'm too tired.
I've heard that so many times.
Okay, stop. So how does that feel?
It feels you know, it's interesting how it feels like kind of like I'm being taken advantage of. That's kind of how I feel. Okay. Like, okay, you're tired, so that means I have to do it, kind of thing.
Okay. So if you didn't have a kid who did this so much and you weren't burnt out about it, how would you be feeling if a kid was doing this?
Disrespected.
Okay, disrespected. What about a little bit of helpless, like what can I do here?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And
well, what's my next?
Maybe hopeless, helpless.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So in this case, when you're feeling helpless, hopeless, despair, thinking what can I, and you actually, I've actually done it for the kids just to get them to shut up because it's so annoying, you know, when they do this. And so, and which is just totally reinforcing the behavior itself. But
yep.
When you feel those feelings, then you know your child's goal is inadequacy. And what my behavior is saying here is I feel helpless. I feel like I can't do it. But if I get you to keep asking me to do it and interacting with me, and sometimes you even do it for me, then I feel loved and I feel special. So I've mistakenly come to get my need to feel loved or special or powerful met by doing this whiny, wimpy, can't do it thing. And that's the mistaken goal of inadequacy.
Okay. Debbie, can I just back up a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, I'm still stuck with when you were pretending to be the 13-year-old and you were saying, I hate you and all that, to the parent, what was the corrective behavior for the parent? What would you suggest that the parent do in that situation?
Okay, so the first thing you want to do is stop hurting back and stop punishing, because revenge behavior doesn't happen out of the blue. When your child goes into revenge, it's a buildup of things that have been happening. And that's why we get so surprised when it occurs. We're like, what did I do? You know, all I said or all I did was blah, blah, blah. And here are my kids saying I'm mean and stupid and, you know, they hate me. Because it's not, you have to remember, and for all parents out there, it is not the thing right in front of you that caused it. It usually builds up over time. Maybe it's days, maybe it's weeks. Maybe we're not spending enough time with them. Maybe we're spending too much time with them and we're not giving them enough, you know, things to do, like chores. They need to feel valuable. They need to feel like they're contributing. Maybe we haven't been listening to them enough. Maybe something in their world has hurt them. For example, you mentioned bullying. Kids that get bullying will absolutely come home and be in the goal of revenge, take down their parents. They're making their parents feel hurt the way they feel hurt. So it's a mistaken belief that that's how I get my need met. So for whatever reason that it's occurred, and again, I explore that in my classes with parents. We look at what are the things that cause revenge in our kids. But the first thing that you need to do is stop, it's postpone discipline. Because if you discipline or punish that kid right now, they're going to feel even more alienated, get even more upset and angry, feel even more like they don't belong, and it's going to escalate. So for that child, it's important to stop disciplining right now. Now, you can come back later once the relationship's been reestablished, and you need to come back later, especially if they've hurt something or broken something, that they need to repair a mistake or whatever. But right now in this moment, it's really important to set aside discipline. And then you want to, I always say, like if they say something like, I hate you, I'll say, ow, that hurt. Because you want to reflect, you want to mirror back to them the impact that they're having on their world. And so in the case of them saying something hurtful, typically you feel hurt. And when you say to a child either ow or that hurts, It's giving them words for what they're doing. See, a lot of times we'll say something like, you're making me mad. Well, yeah, we're getting mad because they're misbehaving, but the truth is we feel hurt. And so we're actually being more accurate by saying, ow, so that they have an opportunity to kind of assess what the impact they're having on their world, and then they can determine whether they want to continue to do that or not. It's giving them an opportunity to look in the mirror, to see what they're doing. And so I've always found that saying ow is one of the best responses initially when a child's being hurtful or hateful. And then I want to look and see, did I do anything to contribute to this? Was I yelling at him? Was I not listening? And I can always tell when I'm doing this one with my daughter Michelle, because she'll say, you're not listening to me. And that's the cue. It's like, you're right. I need to stop and listen to what you have to say. So I might say, I apologize for yelling at you. I apologize that I wasn't taking the time to think through what you said. You know, I apologize for whatever it is that you see you could have done to contribute to this hurt back cycle. And one time my daughter came in the door, Brie came in the door, and she slammed the door, and she said something really nasty to me, and she was being awful, and I said, ow, that hurts. And I was thinking, like, what did I do, you know, to cause her to be so mean and nasty to me? And I couldn't think of anything, but I said to her, I said, you know, I'm trying to think of what I may have done to hurt you, and I can't think of anything, but if I did something, I apologize for it. And she just stomped off to her room and slammed the door, and I'm sitting there going, what in the world happened to my kid? And I was, you know, just on the couch kind of blown away, and she came out like 5 minutes later, and she was bawling her head off, and I'm holding her and, you know, rubbing her back, and she's crying and crying. And like 5 minutes later, she says, I got in a fight with Kino and Jen today, and they're not my friends anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, really? So, you know, I said this in my head, like, that's my problem? I don't think so. But, you know, she felt hurt in the world. She came home. She took it out on me. What would have happened when she slammed the door if I had disciplined her, when she called me a name, if I had disciplined her then?
Mm-hmm. She would have just gone. She would have gotten more angry at you.
Yeah, she would have gone into her room, slammed the door. She would have never come to me. I would have never been able to be there for her, to console her. And that's so important for especially the preteen, that, you know, that we understand that there's drama in their world, in their life, that, you know, they can connect with us in that. And so that's why in this goal, when it's the most difficult, the most challenging for you parents to postpone discipline because their behavior is ugly, nasty, disrespectful, you don't want to go there. Your instinct as a parent is going to be to shut this down now. And it's the worst thing you can do.
This is really, I'm finding this so extremely valuable. And
no kidding. I think it stems, too, right up into how we as adults model that kind of behavior. For example, you know, when dad's had a rough day at work and comes home and takes it out on the family, kind of the same type of thing.
Exactly.
You know? Interesting.
And when you were saying before, I don't know if you went into this, but when, like, the child, his goal or her goal is to feel loved, like, I'm not picking up the backpack. No, I'm tired.
Okay, yes, that's the goal.
So then what do you do in that situation?
Let me think of a quick one I can give parents. Okay, there's one that I call distract them and give it to them. Oh, no, let me get this other one. It's break it into smaller steps and celebrate successes. So my daughter Michelle, for a while, we get home from school. This is when she was about 4. I didn't mention, by the way, my kids are 25, 20, and 19 now. So they're all grown. So I've been through all this. Yeah. So when Michelle was about 4 years old, she would come home. We'd all get home after school and work and everything, and she'd get to the bottom of the stairs, and she just starts screaming, going, I can't get up the stairs. I'm too tired. I can't get up the stairs. And I would finally just go over and pick her up and carry up the stairs to get her to shut up. And, you know, it was miserable, and every day she was doing this. So after a couple of weeks, I realized I had a misbehavior on my hands, so I'm pulling out my books and I'm looking at the goal chart, and it's like, okay, she's in the goal of inadequacy because I'm feeling helpless, despair, and I'm doing it for her. So what am I going to do? Okay, break it up into smaller steps, celebrate successes. So the next day comes, she gets to the bottom of the stairs, she's going, I can't get up the stairs, I'm so tired. And so I got down there next to her, and I looked at her and I said, Michelle, do you think you can make it up 3 stairs? She goes, I don't know. And I said, well, let's try. And we go, and we went up 3 stairs, and then I clapped my hands and we celebrated. And I go, how about 3 more? Way to go, good job. How about 3 more? And we went all the way up the stairs like that. And she never did that again.
Hmm.
So something about getting down, breaking into smaller steps, celebrating, she wasn't getting the goodie that she was getting when I was getting frustrated with it, when I was doing it for her.
Wow.
That makes sense.
A light just
went off. And that's just, again, I'm giving such a brief, I mean, I don't want parents to be left empty-handed here, because like I spend 3 hours in a parenting class teaching this whole, all these ideas, how to identify each of the 4 goals, how to correct each of the 4 goals. I go into a ton of information, so I don't want everybody to think it's this simplistic.
Oh no, you're just giving an overview here in the time that we have, and of course, you know, people can go to your website to find out more information and get more. You have a ton of resources there. And also, you know, you have the dial of discipline, which we're going to talk about in just a few minutes. And do you think that we should go into questions now from people? Because we have some great questions.
I think so, because we're, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I've got one here from Patricia in Toronto. She says, thank you, Debbie, for helping parents. My question is, how do I get out of the pattern of threats to make my child behave? I know I can't make them behave, but still I try, despite knowing that this is not good in the long run. The threats are basically, if you don't do this, then you will lose that. And now, to make it worse, I hear my 2 sons using this pattern on each other. I have used natural consequences, but not consistently. I don't like the dynamic that these ultimatums set up with my children. Help.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, she sounds like she's been trying really hard, and the unfortunate thing is when you don't have solid tools to use, you keep getting that result. And so she's aware, it's Patricia, right?
Yes.
Patricia, she's aware that this is ineffective, but she doesn't have the what-to-dos instead. And so that's one of the issues and one of the problems, one of the challenges parents have with being consistent is you've got to have good tools that are effective so that you feel like you can respond to your kids' behavior and be effective. And one of my favorite things is to teach parents how to get kids to do stuff. Like, I teach parents how to get their kids to take out the trash without saying a word. And when your kid goes and picks up the trash and takes it out without saying anything, I mean, you feel really hot as a parent. Like, I'm good. You know? And so for Patricia to just... first, to make an intention, to understand how much you're undermining yourself with the threats. Because every time you say something and you don't follow through, you're undermining your parental authority. So it's better to say nothing at all than to make an empty threat, something that you're not willing to follow through with. And the other thing is to just give yourself a lot of resources. And one thing that I'm not great at is telling you generally how to parent, that I can do a specific situation. So, for example, if you said, you know, my kid is sitting in front of the TV and he's supposed to have his chores done, and, you know, I tell him if he doesn't get up and take the trash out or whatever, that I'm going to turn the TV off or I'm going to take away his Nintendo or, you know, whatever. In that situation, then I could sit here and come up with a couple of ideas of, you know, what can you do instead. But, you know, to respond in a kind of a general way, it's difficult for me to do that.
Well, I have some more specific questions,
that'd be
great. I think. This is, okay. This is a 15-year-old, so you do deal with teenagers?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love teenagers.
Okay. Dear Debbie, I have a son who is 15, and he has ADD and ODD. He is a ticking time bomb, Anytime I try to ask him to do something, he explodes. Anytime I inquire about his schoolwork, he freaks out. It seems like anytime I try to engage him in anything, he goes berserk. He calls me names, swears, screams, threatens, etc. How do you suggest I go about dealing with him? I try not to engage in arguments and screaming matches with him, but he just keeps going on and on. He is the type of person who has to get the last word in, even if it is under his breath. I ignore this, but he just goes on. I will walk away or tell him to go to his room, but even from his room, he is still making comments to try to draw me into an argument. Please help me find a way that I can communicate with him where it doesn't turn into World War III.
In this case, hopefully she's getting and has gotten, you know, throughout his school life, resources and help for that, because kids that are diagnosed with ADD and ODD definitely need beyond what my classes teach in terms of some intervention. But just a few things I would say right off the bat, and knowing that he's 15 years old, one thing I would, what was her name again? Does it have it on?
TJ.
So one thing I would suggest to TJ is that you sit down with your son and you tell him you're going to fire yourself as his disciplinarian. That, you know, he's 15 and it's, you know, it's time that he starts working on a team with you and figuring out how he's going to manage his own life, and that you're going to be more like his coach than his disciplinarian, and that you want to help him figure out how he's going to manage all these different things, and that you sit down, TJ, and you start making contracts with him. So each thing that has caused an explosion before, you want to pick them apart one at a time. Don't overwhelm yourself and him with a bunch of stuff. So pick one thing. Let's say the one battle you're having on is homework time after school. So you want to sit down with him and come up with an agreement. So you're going to sit down and say, okay, let's come up with an agreement of what doing homework after school looks like for you. And get a lot of information from him. Ask him to describe, you know, does it depend on what your day's like? Do you need a break when you get home? What would your optimal solution be? What would it look like here? And coach him to come up with a way that this is going to look after school. You know, you want to lead him to suggesting, you know, well, how about if I sit down and I do 10 minutes of homework and then I play for 10 minutes, and I do 10 minutes of homework and then I play for 10 minutes, because usually kids with ADD need short bursts of focus, you know, intermixed with some taking some breaks. And give him a timer, you know, is that going to be part of this, that he gets a timer and he gets to figure out what he's going to do, but that you break down each thing that you've fought with in the past and just start making agreements, making contracts. And I actually sign these with my kids. You know, we'll come up with some agreement, and then I put little X's and lines, and I'll sign it, and they sign it. And then they go on the fridge, and they're there, you know, until we've all been trained into a new pattern of behavior. And it's one of the best ways to get out of the power struggle, because then a day comes around, and you're concerned about him doing his homework, maybe he's not doing it and you think he should be, you refer to the contract. And so the contract is what's disciplining him, not you. So you don't become his dartboard for his anger and his frustration. It's the contract. And when contracts don't work, and this is just for all parents out there, if a contract isn't working consistently, you want to sit back down and recreate it, because either your child didn't buy into it or something's wrong with the contract, because when they're effective, when they work, the kids usually follow through with them pretty well.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now,
good suggestion for her.
Yes, yeah. Okay, well, I have another one here from Andrea in Oshawa. Is that Canada?
That's Oshawa. Oshawa, Ontario. Yeah, we've had a
Ontario, yeah.
Few Canadian calls or questions.
How do I stop my 5-year-old twin boys from participating in toilet talk? I was advised to just ignore it, and I do, but they encourage each other with their laughs, and someone is always available for that kind of entertainment, even if I am not. Ignoring it does not work.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because the kids do go through that stage of when my son was 4 or 5, they called it potty mouth, and it's very annoying to us parents. We don't like hearing it. It's gross. It's disgusting. And the unfortunate thing is the more attention we give it, obviously, the more they learn that they can get, they get power, they get attention, or whatever. They're getting their needs met by us redirecting them, so they'll often do it more. So I think this would be a good situation to just come up with a response and respond with, like, a broken record, like what I was talking about earlier. So figuring out, well, you probably aren't going to get them to stop it completely. It, maybe in front of you, you know, if you work really hard at it, but it's something that, you know, they pick up on at school and they keep doing it. So if you could come up with a way that you're going to respond, and it could be something like, when the two of you talk like that, I feel upset. And so what I'm going to do is, you know, be in another room, because I'm not willing to be around the two of you when you're talking like that. Or some kind of a, something that you can say in those situations that you feel comfortable with. So, you know, it's not okay that you guys talk like that. It's not appropriate. And I'm not willing to be around it. So I'm going to be in the other room and you guys do your thing. Or you know, I'm not sure exactly. I'd have to kind of talk this through with the mom a little bit. But try to come up with some way that you could just respond and just make that your standard response so that they're not getting a rise out of you every time it happens. Because that's going to keep the phase mm-hmm. or the stage that it is going on longer than maybe it needs to be. And if, as soon as they realize, and I understand her point of ignoring, because ignoring really doesn't work. She needs to make a statement and say, that's not okay. And in fact, if your part of your broken record wants to be saying that in a very firm tone, like, that is not okay with me, every time they do it, then you just respond like a broken record. As long as you're not escalating your emotional response, you're disciplining, you're doing a good job. It's just young kids really do need a lot of repetitions. And in a case like this, the repetition without the parent losing it is important to get the phase to kind of run its course sooner rather than later.
Okay. I'm just going through them because I know we're getting close to our time here. What about hitting? I know I can't find a specific question, but people were, I know I've gotten a lot of questions about what do you do when your kids are hitting you, even the little children, you know, they're just...
Yeah, right. There was one here from Claire in South Bay. What do we do with an almost 9-year-old boy who hits his dad when he's frustrated and angry? His dad has not set limits and has issues with saying no.
Well, then, I mean, if the dad isn't able to set limits, then I think that's where you'd have to work with that. I think that a lot of times what happens is parents will say, I don't hit my kids. Why are they hitting, you know, either each other or me? And one of the things I like to remind parents is that even though I don't like to use my size, you are bigger. So if you've got a toddler that's hitting you, you really need to deflect that, not let them do that. And not because it's bad for you. You know, parents will say, oh, it hurts. And, you know, one mom even got her cornea scratched. I mean, that was terrible. But it's like, it's not that it's bad for you. It's really bad for your kids to hurt you. It's really bad for your kids to be disrespectful to you. So you're an adult. I mean, we're adults. Our self-esteem is already whatever it is. This isn't shaping our character at all. But it is shaping our children's character. So, you know, I think it's great that the parents seeking what to do about this, because it is harmful to children to be able to treat their parents disrespectfully. Now, what to do about it, that's always, you know, the million-dollar question. So in this case, with a 9-year-old, if the dad is not setting good limits, what that behavior is saying to me, it's screaming for, I need limits. I need to know where the boundaries are here. Yes, I know I'm loved, but I need to know that I can't run amok in this world. Kids have to have limits, and they have to have boundaries, and they will be behaving terribly if we're not providing appropriate limits to them. So it sounds like... In this situation, it could be even marriage counseling, because it sounds like a mom is saying what the dad is doing, and there's no
right.
power. There is no power for you in that. You as a parent need to figure out what you can do differently with your children, and your parenting partner needs to figure out what they can do differently. If you're trying to change your parenting partner, you're getting yourself in a world of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I have one from, it looks like from a teacher, possibly, from Dawn from West Palm Beach. Does the corrective measure for the power struggle work in the classroom environment in the same way?
Yes, absolutely. And I teach a sister class called Redirecting for a Cooperative Classroom, which is the same curriculum, but for teachers and for classroom environments. And the main difference is that a teacher is dealing with 30 kids. So there's a lot of distinctions to be made there, because what all of this is based on is having a one-on-one relationship or one-on-one rapport. And teachers often don't have that freedom. So they might get in the middle of this and they'll find that that one child is monopolizing everything. And so the curriculum for teachers has to do with creating a lot more teamwork in the classroom in order to facilitate being able to manage the classroom where she's not having to do the managing, where the classroom agreements that are set up are doing it and the kids are all doing it, so that a child who's trying to monopolize things doesn't achieve that. You know, they're not getting the reward for doing that because the classroom is set up to run. It's not all on the teacher's shoulders, which is what causes teachers to get so frustrated. They really need to get these kids on board, because kids are smart and they're creative and they're really good at doing that. So, yes, if you're dealing one-on-one with one of your students, absolutely you can empower them and give them appropriate ways to be powerful. And you probably find, as a teacher, these are the kids that you'll ask to, you know, erase the board. These are the kids you'll send to to take a note to the office for you. They're the ones that you put in charge of things, because being in charge of something or being in a leadership position is an appropriate way to be powerful. So when the child is in the classroom behaving inappropriately and power struggling with you, what you're looking for is how to give him appropriate power so that he's not doing this inappropriate power, which is undermining you. And just a little caveat here, too, there's actually a fifth goal that gets taught to teachers that's not taught to parents. And so there's actually more information that goes out to teachers about the goals.
Great. There's another one that came by through the webcast, and then from Marianne in Montreal. And then I guess we can go ahead then and talk about your, I want to hear more about your dial of discipline. But Marianne says, I do this sidestepping, and the response is being ignored. I end up cleaning my child's room, because everything's scattered on the living room floor. I wind up cleaning that up, including dishes and glasses of refreshments I have served. How do you get your child to hear you, appreciate all you have done, offered, and served, and acknowledge what you are lovingly asking?
Well, it was Marion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Marion, they're not going to acknowledge you or appreciate you till they have kids. They're probably not till they're in their 30s.
Oh, no.
So get over that one. You know, if that happens, it's a bonus, but that's not typical, and you can't expect that, especially out of a teenager. Also, I appreciate that you're sidestepping, and that's only the first step to get out of a power struggle. There's a lot more hands-on things that you can do to get the kids to do what they're supposed to do. And the number one thing I could tell you what not to do, which is to keep doing it for them. Because that if you keep doing it for them, of course they're not going to do it if they know mom's going to do it. So one thing I can suggest without, because I know we're almost out of time here, one of the things on my special offer for you guys tonight is I have 200 pep talks. So I've been recording every morning a 3 to 5 minute parenting pep talk. So these are all coaching and something, some ideas or inspiration or ways to do things. And I've been recording these for close to a year. So I have 200 of them that I'm offering. They're on MP3s. Each of them are only 3 minutes long. But I did a huge series back in, I think it was May or something like that, where I spent about 3 weeks talking about these goals and talking about getting out of power struggles. There was a whole week-long series of pep talks I did going through all the different ideas for how you can get out of a power struggle. Because what happens is you want to sidestep the power struggle, like we talked about, by stopping talking. But then I give you about 5 or 10 ideas of what you can do instead or what you can do next. And each of those ideas isn't going to work in every power struggle, but hopefully one of them will work in the power struggle you're having right now. And hopefully in that moment where you sidestep, you have a chance to think, hopefully a good idea will pop in your head. So that's one thing I can actually suggest for everybody. If you get these pep talks, they're all topics. So you can just scroll through and pick, you know, whatever topics you need right now, and then you have all these different pep talks that you can just click on and listen to whenever you, you know, need some inspiration. And they're only, like I said, 3 to 5 minutes long, so it's not like you have to put in a CD and listen to it for an hour.
Well, great. So then this sounds like a really good time then for you to just go ahead and talk about this special offer that you have for the Happier Kids Now subscribers, including, you know, the pep talks and Dial of Discipline. I'd love to hear more about all of that. So why don't you go ahead and, if you like, tell us about that.
Okay. So what I have is the 200 pep talks, which are 3 to 5 minutes, just great, quick coaching, inspiration, examples of things. And those are on MP3, so you just can go in and you click and you can listen to them on your computer or download them on your iPhone or whatever you'd like to do with those. And the 200 pep talks goes for $145. And then I have an ebook, which is a series of articles that I've written on a whole variety of topics. You get to know my kids very well in these articles, because I write a lot about them. And the ebook is $19.95, so that's a downloadable book, 10 inspirational stories written by me. And then I have the Dial of Discipline, which this is what I'm very excited about. I had this idea in 1996 to do a Dial of Discipline, because when I taught parents this idea of the four goals, I wanted to make something so that they would have something handy in their purse to use when they got into these situations. And it's been that many years, I guess 14 years ago, that I had the idea, and I just recently have been making it happen, so getting them actually produced and getting a CD produced with them. So I'm just terribly excited about this because they're really cool. So it's a handheld, like, slide chart type of thing that you'll take out, and when your child's misbehaving, it starts right off with, if you feel this, and it'll give you, for each of the goals, it'll give you a few of the feeling triggers. So what you would be feeling, so you can guess which of the four goals your child's in. And then it'll say, and that means that your child's mistaken goal is, and it'll lead you to either attention, power, revenge, or inadequacy. And then it'll tell you what the child's mistaken belief there is. So, you know, if you feel hurt, like you want to hurt them back, then you know your child's mistaken belief is revenge. And what their behavior is saying is, I feel hurt the way you feel hurt. So it'll describe that to you in there. And then it'll say, and these are some of the responses that you can give. So it'll go through and give you some buzzwords. And one of the reasons that I did the CD with it was both to explain the process of how to use it, but also to expand on, because it is just, you know, a single handheld device, to expand on the what to do's. So there's a bulleted list of what to do there, but on the CD, I go through a longer explanation. So when you see the bullet, it'll just be a reminder of a longer process that you know what to do now. And so
I just want to stop you for 1 second and just let everyone know that they can go to happierkidsnow.com/Debbie. So that's www.happierkidsnow.com/Debbie to see all of these. Now, are these all separate items, Debbie?
Yeah, they're all separate, but what we did, and that one is like $39.95, so it added up to $195. So we put on the web a 48-hour special for the Happier Kids Now of $97.50 for all of those. We're doing a 50% off of those as a package.
I didn't know that.
Awesome. Yeah. So that's what's up, and it's actually on the Dial of Discipline website, our shopping cart, because, well, you know why. So if they go to dialofdiscipline.com, that's where we have the half-price offer. And I'm working on having a link up on the Positive Parenting site, but I don't think it's quite working well yet.
Okay, so they need to go to get this special offer. They need to go to dialofdiscipline.com?
Yeah, or Positive Parenting. I'll have it working soon. So by the, you know.
Okay.
I was working on it before the show, and it looked like it wasn't coming up, so I'm going to go out and work on it some more.
Okay. So anyway, so we'll give you the link. So don't worry about that. We'll go ahead and give you the link so you have the proper link to go there. So you get the 200 pep talks, which is usually goes by that by itself $145, and the ebook is $19.95, and then the Dial of Discipline, and that's a physical product, right?
Yes, that's a physical product and a CD.
And a CD. So, and then you're offering that all of that for how much?
$97.50. So it's half $195, which is what they add up to.
Okay, and only 48 hours? Because a lot of people will see this later. But
well, we can do it longer. I mean, we can do it whatever you think. We just put it up that way because we're like, we want to make a special for them, so what do we do?
A lot of people, a lot of people may not, by the time that they listen to you or the special offer will be up there for a while, so I think that people will be able to, they'll be coming in later on and at all different stages, so that's incredible. Thank you so much for doing that for our Happier Kids Now subscribers, Debbie. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else that you wanted to share in your closing remarks?
I guess it's just for all parents, no matter how old your kids are, to never give up. And I love that the parents of teenagers are listening and writing in questions, because a lot of times, by the time kids get to be teenagers, parents just kind of give up on them. And it's never, never too late. And if you have toddlers, if you have three-year-olds, definitely surround yourself with good parenting and education and information, because chances are you got what you got from your parents, and if you're fortunate, it was good, but for most of us, it was a lot of crazy-making parenting. So without bringing in new information, you don't have a lot of tools. So this is one of the best ways to give yourself, arm yourself with lots of great ideas and different ways to discipline your kids so that you're having fun. I mean, I get so frustrated that parents aren't always having fun with their kids. They feel like they have to be a policeman all the time, and you should be having a ton of fun with your kids. And even when you're disciplining, if you have good tools to use, even the disciplining can be fun, because you can see what a value you're being to them. And that's what I want. I want parents to be loving this, to be having a great time. I mean, I loved having three teen. My kids were teenagers. I don't know, I think there was about 6 years there where I had three teenagers, and it was fabulous because I did this stuff when they were three. I got an experience of it and how powerful it was, so I got to have fun with it.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the main thing, I think, is definitely, I agree with that, having fun, because that is contagious, and that just raises your vibration, and then you elicit different reactions from your children when you're having fun.
Exactly.
When you're not having fun.
And I just really appreciate all the work that you all are doing and what you're providing to parents out there. These interviews are just fabulous. It's just so wonderful that they have access to so much great parenting information. So, great job what you two are doing.
Well, thank you so much, Deb. We really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you so much for being with us today and sharing these amazing, amazing tools with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, we want to thank everybody for being on the webcast today and for all of those on the telephone. We really, really appreciate your joining us. And in just about 45 minutes or so, we're going to have and another amazing interview with John Seeley.
45? You mean 2 hours?
I meant to say about an hour and a half. That's what I meant to say. Or an hour and 45 minutes. Yeah. Where John is going to help us help our kids get unstuck. And we also want you to let you know about the incredible lineup that we have for tomorrow. First, at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Christine Carter. She's the director of the Greater Good Science Center at UC Berkeley, and she's going to talk to us about emotional literacy and raising happy kids. And then at 8 p.m. Eastern, we have the highly acclaimed author of The Biology of Belief, Bruce Lipton, who will be speaking about the science of conscious parenting. Again, if you're interested in the VIP upgrade so you can have a lifetime access to these trainings and interviews, plus be one of the first 500 people to get the extra huge bonuses, you can go to happierkidsnow.com/upgrade. And Rhonda and I want to thank you all so much for being with us on the Happier Kids Now Expo. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.